Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Eric Wiener. This is the very first episode that I had to re-record because of that Trump text alert. I don't know if you guys remember that, but by this time, because I believe when this episode airs, it'll be late November to early December because we're backlogged, that alert would have taken place about a month and a half to 2 months ago, and I record the show on either FaceTime audio or Skype audio when the guest isn't in Los Angeles. So, you know, there was that expression, thanks Obama. Well, thanks Trump, but without a sarcastic tone, because he actually did technically ruin this episode. But have no fear, because it's going to be a good one. I know a little bit more about Eric Wiener than I did before that other interview, so it'll be cool. But Kim Wiener is the reason for this, and so is Island Lake Camp. So I just want to give shout-outs to the Sports and Arts Center at Island Lake, the very first place where I performed on guitar for an audience. Also used to wrestle there. Even you do flying trapeze and theater there. And Kim is definitely an ILC for lifer, so shout-out to Staraka. Shout-out to, oh my god, Alice's Cow Palace. I'm remembering that right now. I don't think it exists anymore, but that place was dope. Or if it does exist, go there, because it's amazing. It's, I guess, on the border of where, like, upstate New York and Pennsylvania merge, somewhere near Hancock, the bustling city of Hancock. So Eric is doing a lot of really cool things in the music event space, and I'm not even going to butcher it. We'll get to it, and hopefully we will talk about mental health, Westchester, Colorado, all these things that I learned about last time. And immediately after this interview, actually, Tim Dove from Ernie Ball is coming into the studio for an interview, so that'll be airing the following week, and I like Tim a lot. And, you know, like Eric and I, he's from New York, but the upstate. So we've got upstate New York representing next week, Westchester representing now, and Long Island, me, representing every single episode. In LA, LI to LA. The accents I know are annoying. I'm sorry. So I'm going to be in Hawaii actually next week, but next week isn't next week because next week will be, you know, another month from now. Time is weird. Pre-recording's weird, but you're not weird. And then I believe I'm coming in actually to record on Halloween, which will be spooky. We've got Raymond Rasmussen, who gives incredible advice to upstart bands and engineers and producers. So we're going to learn a lot. Right now we're going to learn about the event space with music curation and blogging. It was actually a food blog turned into a music blog. Some wild, some honey, and some pie. And then next week we're going to learn about guitar strings and guitars, Ernie Ball Music Man. And then the following week we're just going to learn about music, and I guess starting from zero and hopefully ending, you know, at the top. So every week I have a different guest on the show. We're already in the triple digits. As always, I miss Emily Burke. When she's in town, she co-hosts. She's currently editing this episode and probably many others on Backlog. You could tune in every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, for Waldman's Words, rerunning every single Sunday morning, bright and early, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern. You can go on iTunes, the podcast app, download every episode for free and subscribe. In addition, you can go to adobe.com and stream every single episode. So I think I said in the last intro, I'll close out with this as well. This is definitely the more Jewish Waldman's Words. We've got a Wiener, we've got a Waldman, and we've got several words. Enjoy these commercials. Enjoy these songs. Enjoy yourself. Talk soon. Hello. We are back with take two of Wiener Waldman Words. So thank you, Eric, for making time for this.
Of course. My pleasure, man. I appreciate what you're doing. I love the show and really excited to be on.
Cool. Well, I know a little bit more about you, like I said in the intro and I said to you off quote unquote camera, but I'm going to still have the perspective of learning more. So I gave Kim a shout out, Kim with a Y. in the beginning, and I know that you are from Westchester. So let's maybe start with a question that I didn't ask you last time, the one that will forever be lost in the vault. So your whole family, we talked about, I guess, you and Kim growing up with music, but what was your household like in Westchester? Like, were your parents really ingratiated in music, or was this just completely your own thing?
You know, they always encouraged our passions. I think that that was always a very important part of our family dynamic. Find a passion and pour yourself into it. And very encouraging of everything there. My dad isn't, you know, really a musical guy. I guess in high school, he started picking up guitar again. He played in high school. And so he was taking guitar lessons when I was, I guess, in middle school.
Oh, that's cool.
So there was a little bit of a musical dynamic in my family there. He bought himself a U.S. Stratocaster and bought me a Mexican Strat. And we both would, you know, jam out with our guitar teacher. Really, I forget his name, honestly, but he was awesome.
Like a group lesson? I'd just go to a group lesson with your dad, or was it like private? With the same teacher
private,
separately.
Private,
okay.
Private. With the same teacher.
Oh, cool.
And I remember I would just go to this thing. I wouldn't even be interested in learning guitar. I just wanted to sit in there and watch this guy play. That was about as far along in guitar as I got. I learned how to play a couple songs, but not much. And really, again, just to reiterate, it was all about encouraging our passions and creativity.
I mean, you're lucky you have that. I mean, I do love my parents, but I mean, my mom was definitely encouraging my lack of a passion to potentially go to law school for the quote-unquote safe career of law, and wasn't exactly the most stoked Long Island Jewish mother when I got my Michigan degree and moved out here for rock and roll. So it's cool that they had that. Not everyone does, especially, you know, this day and age when people are more scared about bills than ever before. So you're fortunate. But what about your sister? Now, we could talk about, obviously, Island Lake and tennis and all that, but what was she into? I know that you guys didn't exactly coalesce with the same style of music, but I don't know. I'd like to think that I was a really positive musical influence for my sister, so I'm curious how like that food chain worked.
I think my dad had more of an influence on me musically than my sister, exposing me to the Beatles, Beach Boys, Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, Jackson 5, etc. But my sister definitely encouraged me as far as musical theater went. I was Oliver and Oliver a couple times when I was young. I was in a lot of musical theater until about the age of 12. So for about 5 years, I did it. And along the way, we were actually in various shows together. When we overlapped at summer camp, she was definitely encouraging of the roles I was playing in those musicals. And really just, as opposed to my brother, who was very discouraging, was always a voice of reason and excitement for my passion, as opposed to my brother, who was much more just like, play sports.
Mm-hmm. In that voice, probably, too. I mean, what's funny about Island Lake, and I gave them a shout out in the beginning, is that was actually one of the reasons I went there was musical theater and wrestling. And then I gravitated more towards guitar, but it's quite an unbelievable theater camp. The way that they, you know, build sets is something that I've never seen at a sleepaway camp before. It used to feel kind of like amateur hour at the Catskills, and I felt like this was like off Broadway, if that makes sense.
Oh yeah, it was insane, the sets. I remember what they did with Lion King was incredible, and what they've done with, you know, all sorts of plays, but for ones I participated in, I'm trying to remember, so long ago. I was in Grease, I remember that. I was Snoopy and Charlie Brown.
Oh, and you're a good man, musical. Charlie Brown. I was Charlie Brown when I was 13. In that, the one, happiness is finding a pencil. That one, is that?
Yep,
the one
yeah. I sang Supper Time.
Oh my God, that's right. Yeah, that was a good one. That was a really good musical. I digress. I haven't thought about that in a long time, but I mean the sets and Island Lake. What's cool is that I guess it's a really good incubator service for people who want to work in theater and not just on the stage, because they had a tech department, they had a costuming department. It's pretty forward thinking for, I mean, I'm assuming you were like either single digits or lower double digits while you're doing that stuff. So obviously it fostered something.
Yeah.
But then tell me about, I guess, growing up and discovering on your own, because yeah, I know you brought up that your father thankfully showed you some of the classics, but what was the first band or series of bands that you got into that you felt were yours?
Well, I mean, I loved emo music when I was a teenager. Bands like Taking Back Sunday, Brand New, Coheed and Cambria.
Okay.
Me and my friends really rallied around that kind of music. Now,
you didn't talk about that earlier. I'm glad you brought that up. Idobe is the perfect place for you. And you bring up all New York bands, two Long Island, one Rockland County. So respect.
And just to rep the West Coast, I did listen to a lot of Hello Goodbye as well. before that, I'm just trying to think. It really was a lot of oldies and Motown, and I loved the Temptations. I still do, obviously. Epic. I'm trying to think of others. Obviously, I did listen to Top 40 Radio at the time. You know, as most younger kids
well,
do.
What year did you graduate high school?
What's that?
What year did you graduate high school?
2005.
So, I mean, that makes sense. Around that time, that was when Fall Out Boy and My Chemical Romance and the All American Rejects were all really doing well. So that might have been on your, I don't know if you had a playlist per se, maybe on your MySpace page.
I like
page.
Fall Out Boy. I've never got into All American Rejects. I think they had one song I liked.
But when I think of you, because obviously I don't know you that well, we've spoken a few times, one obviously for a long time, but I think of, I guess, more of like the indie world or maybe even like the jam bandy world. Is that accurate?
Definitely not the jam bandy
okay,
world.
Okay, so I'm one for two. Okay, I'll take that.
Indie pop, indie folk. I mean, anything you'll find at festivals like, you know, Newport Folk Festival. I think that's a great example of the music I love and most connect with. Artists like Phoebe Bridgers, Lucius, who are some of my favorite. Death Cab for Cutie, The Shins. Bright Eyes, you know, those were some of the artists that
so not jam
you know, these
band.
Last couple that got me into it.
Yeah, more of, I guess, I mean, because the word indie and the word alternative are so vague and sometimes they're really synonymous, but you decided to go to school in Colorado, but I remember, and this is something I've never heard, speaking of forward thinking with Alan Lake, in your high school, you did a lot of stuff that led to your career in forward thinking as well. Like, I guess, I don't know if it was through a course or through like a program. Can you explain that? Because I think that if there's some high school kids listening to this show and they feel hopeless about their lives and they're way too young to feel hopeless, there are so many options to learn trades.
Of course. So when I was in high school, we had a TV show, like a news show. I was very disinterested in getting involved with that. I didn't want to be filming a news show. I didn't want to be an on-camera talent. So, I wasn't really going to go that route. But the teacher, Mr. O'Brien, came to me and said, listen, Eric, we're launching a new class, Advanced Media Studies. Usually you would have had to take the TV course to get in, but I think you'll be great. We had always talked about Apple products, and that was a big passion of mine because after I had my bar mitzvah, I invested a lot of that into Apple stocks and followed that company really
closely. Look at
you. I guess he saw a passion of mine in media, and he was like, you know, we have cameras for you. We're going to give you video editing software. You know, have at it and learn everything you can. So I started making, for every family vacation that we went on, I made a movie. Some, they started as you know, photo galleries with the Ken Burns effect in iMovie, adding a soundtrack. I remember I used the starting line for one of my first videos.
What song?
As the music.
Wait, what song? Best of Me?
Best of Me, yeah, that's it.
Damn right, that song's so fucking catchy. I love that band. Anyway, you just brought out the best in me. Thank you.
And fast forward, we actually, the Wild Honey by my company, did some video work with the former lead singer of the starting
Vacationer?
Line, who's now Vacationer. Yeah. So full circle, really, really wild to kind of be in that position.
That's cool.
But it started with these photo galleries, and then it evolved and I eventually made an autobiographical documentary about my grandfather that aired on the local station. Once that came out, people would stop him in the movie store when those existed and the pizzeria and say, are you Elmer Litwin from the local channel? And he got a kick out of it. And it's just the type of thing that, you know, my whole family just appreciated it so much. And, you know, when he died in 2015, we rewatched it. And it was just something so profound for our family to have and hold on to and really just a beautiful keepsake. And That was really the beginning of it all. And then I played high school football, and I made our high school football like highlight reel. It was like, I went really overboard with it. Instead of doing like a 10-minute video, I produced a 30-minute, produced, edited, etc., a 30-minute tape. Really crazy. Went game by game, did a jacked up section because that was a segment on ESPN at the time. Had a lot of fun with that. Worked with, like, you know, keyframing and learning a lot about editing. And that was really my first foray into production.
But you learn by doing. You learn by doing. I mean, you were really actually making real art as opposed to just a school project. I mean, first of all, honoring, you said your grandpa's name was Elmer. So shout out to him and, you know, the best name of all time, honestly. Like, it's an archaic name that I'd love you bring back. And also just being really forward thinking and making something like a television show, like a half hour. I mean, that must have taken a lot of time and a lot of trial and error.
Months. And then I sold copies of it.
You did?
I tried to make money on it.
That was your lemonade stand?
That was me being a capitalist, I guess.
Wow, capitalist pig. And is that what led you to go to school in Colorado?
Well, you know, I didn't study film in college. I figured I would get the most well-rounded degree by going into business, marketing, management, etc. Definitely didn't want to go into finance or accounting or anything like that. So studied business marketing and management in Boulder. But I wanted to do something film related. And at the time I was editing these marketing videos for my brother's sports management company. And then I started filming for the University of Colorado football team. I'd film their practices. I'd film the games. It was a lot of fun. Just kind of felt like I was a part of something. But again, it wasn't really creatively stimulating. And I kind of wish I had maybe minored in film. I think I would have gotten a lot out of it, but I didn't. And, you know, I started putting on events in college, and I did a little bit here and there, but it wasn't really until my final semester of school when I got an internship at MTV in London that I really found myself creatively pushing the envelope with both pre-production, production, you know, post-production, creating my own content, building a business, building a brand, and doing something, you know, from scratch that I could call my own, that could be my baby, that hopefully at the time I saw as being a potential for, you know, maybe getting me a job someday.
Was that concurrent, though, with while you're if you're studying abroad in London? I know we asked this before, but people will never hear it. While you were taking classes for Colorado, or was that pretty much like a work study? Like, that was what you did that semester?
I took like three classes when I was there.
Okay.
And then three or four classes to finish up my double degree. And then like 3 or 4 days a week, I'd go into the MTV offices when they told me, hey, we need you for 2 days a week. And I was like, well, I'm going to come in four because I love this so much.
Well, it worked. And you said last time, I believe you had a good hookup with family that helped out, like just getting in that door. And then obviously you stayed in for a little bit, right?
Yeah, my friend and cousin, David Gale, who started MTV Films, put in a good word and scored me that internship for sure.
You've got quite an entrepreneurial family, so fist bump to that. That's pretty cool. And speaking of, I guess, entrepreneurial, I really want to touch on Wild Honey Pie. I just almost tripped over my words. I need some more coffee, but Wild Honey Pie, we're going to talk about that in segment two, but you brought this up with me privately, and I really think it's something important to touch on. Because I'm reading all these articles about people in the music industry and I guess how it's coinciding with certain mental health issues. And I know that this is not exclusive to the music industry or the entertainment industry. It's every single person can have something. So I would love if you'd use this time to discuss your take on that so we can either really learn from an extended monologue or have a brief dialogue about it. And obviously, if it's getting really, really heavy, we can follow through to the next segment with it.
Yeah, you know, mental health is something I'm deeply passionate about. It's both a sad time and a very exciting time where there's more advocates than ever that are working hard to end the stigma around mental health and mental illness. And yet there's still people out there who are ignorant and very disgusting in the way that they view people that struggle with their mental health. They don't greet them with warmth or compassion or empathy. They see them as lesser than, or they want to distance themselves from these people, or maybe they had a bad experience with a relative, and that was years and years ago, maybe even half a century ago, and they still have those negative connotations associated with mental health. But the field of medicine has come so far, natural medicines have come so far, and personally, I'm bipolar. Bipolar 1. I had a psychotic break in 2015 that took me away from my business for about 8 or 9 months. 9 months.
I appreciate you being open about this, by the way. It takes a lot of fucking balls, so thank you.
Of course, and people can judge me for this, or they can welcome me with open arms. I hope they understand that I'm just trying to do my part to end the stigma around it, because what I went through was serious. I was do there was some self-harm involved, and there was I was in my own little universe. I definitely was thinking up things that weren't in existence. It wasn't schizophrenia. It was a psychotic break. Bipolar with a psychotic break. I had thought that the FBI was after me, and that everyone was in on it,
Just some
except for
alternate
me.
realities and some major disconnection. And obviously, I'm not a therapist or licensed. I mean, I consider, as a band manager, that's one of the slashes in my job description. But there's so many people listening to this show that you might be helping, because if everyone is silent about things like this, and like you said, like breaking the stigma, no one's going to learn from it, and people are going to feel that they're unique in a bad way. And if you know you're not alone, it's so much more comforting.
Exactly. And I want to do what I can to shut up the people that are fueled by hate and fear. There are people out there that are rooting against those who struggle with their mental health. And I think it's important that we unify and come together and show our strength, because whether you're bipolar or schizophrenic or
Depressed,
battle
anything.
with depression and anxiety, there's pain in all of it. And I think it's important to know that you're not alone, because when I was going through everything, I truly felt more alone than I've ever felt in my entire life. I pushed everyone away. But I think that it's important to know that there is hope. I mean, I spent 9 months in another world, and then I ended up at a place called Gould Farm, which is, essentially a farm for recovery, that nurtures hope. And I spent time with animals, and I was, we sang songs in the morning, and I went ice skating and skiing, and I read a lot, and I had a group therapy every week, and met with a psychiatrist every week, and had different routines going on. And it was so incredible and life-changing. And
Like a
I just
rebirth, would you
this
say?
this might as well be an ad for Gould Farm. Like, if you are struggling and you feel like there's no hope, look up Gould Farm and see what they offer. It's not cheap, but I think they have options as far as how to pay for it. But it's the most incredible place in the world, and I'm so happy I went. I was only there for 3 weeks. A lot of people there stay for 6 months to years at a time. But I felt after 3 weeks that I needed to get home. I needed to get back to work. And that ended up being therapeutic for me. Even though it took me about a year and a half, once being back in New York, to really get my legs under me, get back to business, and start regaining control of my company. But it's just important to know that there's doctors to help you, there's therapists to help you, there's even apps to help you. But there's even farms and
There's different outlets
recovery centers.
to
Yeah, there's
change
just so
your
much out there to
psyche.
help people who struggle with their mental health, and it's important to push hard. And when all hope seems lost, just continue to fight. And that's what I feel like I did, and what I hope people see as a sign of strength and endurance, that they can hopefully draw from that, to find their own strength and endurance.
Well, we're going to cut this off in a minute, but I'm going to re-thank you for that. And because you opened up, just in case someone just missed your story about this, I'll just briefly say that I went through a very dark time in 2007. I quit my sign band, and then 2 months later, my father passed away. And I can tell you that I've been seeing a therapist / grief counselor, Dr. Laura Pashoni, so this might as well be an ad for her. And I don't know where I'd be without her. So I think that, yes, what you touched upon, that there are definitely people that are insensitive and handle information like this in a bad way. But I think that the stigma is changing, where I see a lot more people are way more open about their demons, their battles, and about the fact that they seek counseling. So I say, for some issues, like how Trump interrupted our last show, some things aren't getting better. But for mental health, I feel like the stigma is erasing slightly. Do you agree?
You know, I thought
if you don't, it's okay. Like, I mean, that's the beauty of democracy, right?
I thought it was. And then I've encountered some recent issues that were pretty upsetting. So I think discrimination still exists, but you know, maybe it is getting better. So that's good.
Well, let's end on a more positive note. You're getting better. You're vocal about it. And what you said earlier might really help some kid in Missouri. And I really want to touch upon, I guess, with the second half of this, your company, Wild Honey Pie. And everyone listening, stick around. Eric Weiner, Scott Waldman, both of us miss Emily Burke. Waldman's words, enjoy these commercials, enjoy these ads, and most fucking importantly, take care of yourself. You know, one thing I really respect about Mr. Eric Weiner is that over, you know, the short break, he was actually hustling some wild, some honey, and some pie. So let's talk about that. And again, in case you didn't hear, you know, segment one, I strongly recommend that when this episode is up, you know, on iTunes, which will be the next day after, you know, you're listening to this live, if you're listening live, or on Adobe.com, you listen, because Eric really opened up about some personal matters having to do with, you know, bipolar disorder and, you know, the treatment he went through after. So that's the real shit. This music stuff, it's awesome, but the most important thing in the world, you know, is your health. So thank you again for that. So I guess let's talk about, from graduation, from leaving London, from graduating Boulder, to I believe you started a food blog.
You sure did.
Tasty.
Yeah, so basically I was a senior in college. I, a couple of years earlier, tried to start a blog when I was studying abroad. I did semester at sea, but found it kind of arduous to do all that writing, and I wasn't really, I didn't have a, you know, good camera, and it just became something I didn't keep up with. But summer senior year, I was in Boulder. I knew I had one more semester after the summer, and I was like, you know what? Good time to start a project. So I started a food blog. I was cooking my own recipes. I was sharing these recipes. I was going to restaurants, giving them my take. And then it lasted for about 2 or 3 months. I never even came up with a name for it. But I helped, you know, I kind of designed it. I made it my own. And then once I got an MTV internship in London, it became pretty easy to see that the food blog was definitely less of the direction I wanted to go, and a music blog seemed like much more something I wanted to do. And this is at a time in 2009 when music blogs were the way to find new music. You know, other than iTunes, you know, iTunes discovery and recommendations, you know, there was no Spotify, there was no Discover Weekly, there were no playlists like that. It was really music blogs that were at the forefront of music discovery. And that was something I was passionate about. Instead of making mixtapes for my friends, I would blog. And that's what I did.
I mean, those were literally the tastemakers back then who kind of, I guess, I mean, kind of an equivalent now is like how like a lot of the SoundCloud rappers are getting big because of that site. But I remember in the early 2010s, I guess those are the ends. Those blogs would get bands major notoriety, and you were a part of that. and transitioning from food to music seems like a logical flow for you based on your taste. So I guess, when did it really flourish?
You know, it's taken time, and it's definitely had to grow organically. I used the Wild Honey Pie as a way to get hired, and that was really, from the beginning, one of my goals. And I got hired by MTV in New York, and I was music supervising and coordinating a show, and then I was helping out with other shows and initiatives within MTV. And I think what really shifted was in 2013. My contract with MTV ended, and I was on my own. And I figured, you know, what the hell am I going to do? So I thought of this idea called Welcome Campers. At the time, it was called Summer Camp. And I invited about 100 people to my parents' property for a day of filming recording sessions, which we had already been doing in the form of what we call buzz sessions, which we do in New York and LA now. But we filmed about so it was 6 bands, 3 songs each, you know, 18 videos. And we filmed it all in one day, and it was all summer camp themed, and it was just something different. It was something I had never seen before or felt before, and it just felt so right, and I turned it around, and I sold brand partnerships on it, and we made enough money to cover all our costs and more and create an income for myself. And that's, I think, when it really started to flourish, and a team of people surrounded me and helped grow the business in a really organic way. And we made a lot of mistakes, and we did some things right. And I think another turning point was really this year, 2018. We relaunched our website. We got rid of the music blog. We dedicated ourselves to our experiential events, our original video content, and our playlists, and, you know, really repositioned ourselves from being a music blog to a music discovery company, because it's 2018 and music blogs are not coming back. I mean, it's not a bright future for music blogs or even music journalism in general. Not to say there's no place for it. I think music journalism is incredibly important. But I think with music so easy to access, $10 a month for every song you would ever really want, it's up to the listener to decide what they like. And I think that that's what's really important. Present the music and present a lot of it and make sure that people can make up their own minds on what they love.
Two things on that, by the way.
That's what's changed.
One of which is a statement and one of which is an inquiry. The statement is the people that I don't understand how someone who listens to music is not willing to pay like $9.99 a month for unlimited Spotify. Like, it's ludicrous to me. It's crazy. It's crazy people talk. And then Welcome Campers. This is intriguing to me as, you know, an alum just like you from Island Lake and others. But can you describe, I guess, I wouldn't say a typical day, just describe day one of a Welcome Campers event.
Well, in one sentence, Welcome Campers is an all-inclusive music festival and summer camp for adults in one. You get to, if you're in Brooklyn or you're in New York, there's a $75 round trip bus available. You get on the bus, there's drinks waiting for you, there's snacks waiting for you, and we put on Wet Hot American Summer or Parent Trap or one of the endless summer camp themed movies that are out there. You're celebrating, you're excited, you're meeting new people on the bus, and then you arrive. You see the circular sign at Camp Lennox, where we host Welcome Campers, that's painted over for the festival itself, with this year will be the logo of the sun shining, and really just a beautiful sight. You drive up the road and the Welcome Camper staff is cheering you on as you arrive. You already have your bunk assignments. The bars are open waiting for you from the second you arrive. Again, it's all inclusive. So drinks, food, lodging, it's all included in the ticket price, and you're sleeping in a bed. So you go and you find your bunk. You've already told us who you want to bunk with if you've bought tickets with friends. So you can maybe, you know, you're on the bottom bunk, your best friend's on the bunk above you. Just like when we were kids, there's showers, there's things to clean. You start drinking. There's music at the waterfront. You put on your bathing suit. You jump in the lake. There's a water trampoline, music playing from the speakers from the back of a golf cart.
Golf cart. Island Lake, yeah, Stoltz family.
Exactly.
Represent.
And the Stoltzes are now on ATVs, but, golf carts at Camp Lennox. And then you have dinner together. Everyone eats in the mess hall together. First night's usually Mexican food. We do have vegan options. We do have vegetarian options, wheat-free options, take care of all dietary restrictions. There's a food truck running in the back. If you want to pay for your premium food, you can absolutely do that. And then at night, we ignite the bonfire, the campfire, and bands start playing around it.
Revival night?
There's a little... almost. And then there's an amphitheater. So bands are playing in front of the campfire with the amphitheater in front of them. Incredible music. And then we're partying until 4 a.m. We do late night dance parties with live music and DJ sets. We sing alongs around the campfire at 3 a.m. There's s'mores making at around midnight. And that's just day one.
What would you say is like the mean age at these events?
You know, it's 21 and up, and I'd say the majority of the people are 25 to 30.
Okay.
That being said, we have, 60-year-olds to come. We have 40-year-olds. But it's definitely not an all-ages, family-friendly festival. Marijuana is legal in Massachusetts, so there's definitely a good amount of that at Welcome Campers. And it's just so – it just feels good. It feels like you're a part of a community. Feels like you're part of something bigger than yourself. And I think that's what a lot of us are looking for in a day and age where, there's just a lot of negativity being spewed everywhere we look. And Welcome Campers is a beacon of positivity and hope and love, basically, for everyone who comes.
It sounds like a fun-filled romp of a weekend. So that's pretty sweet. And obviously, given our history with choosing our days with majors and minors, it's really cool. So I guess now let's hear about these dinner parties, because I'm going to do my best to attend the one on December 16th in LA with Ash, but seems like you're doing these in multiple states and multiple coasts. So how does that work?
Yeah, in August 2017, we were concepting, and I guess before that, we're concepting what can we do to bring the magic of Welcome Campers to the cities that we love, that we want to spend time in. And obviously New York is where we call home. So let's start with Brooklyn and then expand to Manhattan. And a huge chunk of our audience is in LA and then Austin, Texas as well. So one of the most cherished moments we have at Welcome Campers is when we all eat together. There's something about sharing a meal that also harkens back to the roots of the Wild Honey Pie as a food blog. So we came up with this concept of, why don't we do a dinner party with music, and we'll do it in restaurants, so you don't have to do it in people's homes. We'll serve a 3-course prefix menu. Drinks will be included, nothing to worry about, and an awesome band will perform, and the whole thing will be $50. We started doing them, and people bought the tickets. We started doing more. People kept buying tickets, and since we launched, we essentially sold out every single one. If we didn't sell out, it came within 3 or 4 tickets. And we have 13 different restaurant partners at this point in New York, LA, and Austin, Texas. We have a dinner party on Halloween, another one on November 12th in New York, another one on December 19th in New York, planning out January. And then LA, we're starting in November, going to be doing something in December and January and on as well. And then hopefully, be launching in Austin soon enough. So that's the plan for the dinner parties, and they're just a lot of fun. It's a great way to meet people. We think it's a better experience than going to a music venue and seeing a concert. At the end of the day, you go to these venues, it's dark, it's crowded, you're a sardine. The bands are great. I mean, the music is we live for music. Going to concerts is an amazing experience, but the dinner party is we think, what we wish an elevated experience would be.
Well, when I first moved to LA, I'm not sure if I spoke about this during the interview that no one will ever hear, Muhaha, but there was a venue called Largo, and I saw John Bryan play with a lute pedal while I was eating pasta, and I'm seated, I'm eating, I'm drinking, and I mean it's way better than the AMC dine-in theater. And then another night, I believe it was it was a break fast for Yom Kippur with Sarah Silverman, Nick Swardson, Jim Gaffigan, and Chris Hardwick, who's now being lambasted. But it's just as a 37-year-old, and even when I went as a 22, 23-year-old, it was a very uniquely awesome experience to have a well-crafted meal, have a lovely drink, and not have to jump up to see something over a 6'2" person, especially since my wife is 5'2". This might be something that is really up her alley.
That's awesome.
Yep. So I'm going to do my best to convince her to come to Checker Hall. But just for people listening, Checker Hall in Highland Park on December 16th, we've got a Wild Honey Pie event, and Ash is performing. And Highland Park, where it's taking place, is kind of like the equivalent of like a Brooklyn for you. So it makes sense that it's there.
And we hope to hit up the West Side too. And anyone that has dietary restrictions, we can take care of anything. If you're vegan, vegetarian, very important that that people know that we can take care of any dietary restrictions.
That's awesome. Well, so you guys are a multifaceted company with lots. So I guess you touched upon this earlier about kind of the death of the blog or mourning the loss. But what things are exciting you about the state of the music industry other than stuff that you're directly affiliated with?
Well, I think the importance of video content. Really, it's an exciting time for video with the importance of all the video streaming platforms out there. And I think that no one's really capitalized on music video content. And so we're working hard to create the best content possible. We're making official music videos where the label or artist will hire us. We just finished up a video for Steve Aoki. We've got about 4 more videos in the works, a lot of which are animated. Love animated content. Big fan of that. Working on some bids for some big corporations as well. That would be great projects for us to work on. And then we have a series of sessions. And I think sessions are incredibly important to the music landscape as well, allowing artists to reach a new audience and their existing audience with a slight variation on songs they know and love, as well as cover songs. Spotify does a great job with their covers, with their Spotify singles series. And we have our Buzz Sessions, which I mentioned earlier, and essentially taking artists to recording studios, rooftops, parks, wherever we're looking for, and recording music that'll be distributed on YouTube and Facebook and Instagram TV, as well as the audio on Spotify, Apple Music, etc. So we're working hard to create a community that is really invested in the growth of emerging artists, and we're looking to provide services to emerging artists, not only through events, but original video content and playlisting as well.
Well, how did you find Ash, and why Ash for this one in LA? Like, how does that work? Because you're wearing many hats.
Well, Ash, we've actually done a Buzz session with, and she's such a sweet person. I've talked to her on the phone before. We had a FaceTime call, and I believe I was sent her music from a PR agent.
Okay.
And she's on Mom and Pop, which is a great record label. They're she's label mates with Lucius, who are friends of ours. Just an incredible band. If you don't already know who they are, they have an incredible lineup beyond that as well. Courtney Barnett, about as rad
That's
as they
pretty
come.
Prolific. Grammy nominee. It's pretty wild. Yeah.
We're just really excited about what Ash has to offer. In fact, we have some other news coming up that we can't quite yet announce, but we're hoping to work with Ash in a variety of ways in the future. We really believe in her. If we were a label, we'd sign her if we could. So, we're really passionate about what she's doing. We think she has some fun music videos out as well. Check out the music video for Choirs. Really fun, part animated, part live action. Really cute video, and she's just a really exciting individual with so much passion, and she's just so appreciative as well for her fans, and that's something you can see really clearly on her Instagram. It's really a beautiful thing.
And it's an uber stripped down performance. Are her normal shows like more, I guess, full band, or is this going to be like acoustic or just piano? Like, how does that work?
Our dinner parties are typically stripped down, but sometimes there's drums. Sometimes there's, the full setup with synth and bass and everything. I believe for Ash in LA, it's going to be a stripped down performance. Her on piano, there might be a guitarist. I'm not sure yet. But whatever and regardless, it will be a jaw-dropping performance. I'm sure of that. I've seen her in this exact setup before at City Winery in New York City, and she wowed the entire audience. And these were some jaded music industry people, and they all were standing there in awe.
That's every LA show. It's like people like, my dad owns CAA, so LA crowds are tough. But who knows, maybe they could, she could win over. Obviously, if people are going to this show, you know, they're going to expect that experience. So I have a feeling Checker Hall is going to be awesome. And believe it or not, we're done. So how does this compare to interview one? Do you feel a lot better about this one?
Much better.
Yay. So that's a success. So I guess tell people how they could check out what's going on with you and your company.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy. We're called The Wild Honey Pie, and you can find us on our website, thewildhoneypie.com, or on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, wherever. It's just The Wild Honey Pie is our handle on all platforms.
I mean, you'd be surprised. You're helping someone find it, so thank you. Thank you to Westchester. Thank you to Kim Wiener. Thank you to Island Lake. Thank you to the entire state of Colorado and the entire city of London and Brooklyn, of course. And I'm interviewing Tim Dove, actually, in about 15 minutes. He's going to be coming by the studio. He works for Ernie Ball in Artist Relations, just a really awesome guy. We've shared an omelet or two. And next week, I'm actually going to be in Hawaii, but by the time next week is happening, your episode will be airing, I'm assuming, in late November, December. And then the following week, I'm actually recording an episode on Halloween with Raymond Rasmussen, who gives a lot of advice to people behind the scenes and to young upstart bands. So Waldman's Words is fun, and Eric Wiener, you're the man, I guess. Give me an adjective to describe this incredible 40-something minutes of your life period.
Invigorating.
Wow. I will say that that just annihilated my psyche. So thank you. Every single Tuesday, 5 o'clock Pacific time, 8 o'clock Eastern Brooklyn time, the show airs. Every single Sunday, bright and early, 5 a.m. Pacific time, 8 a.m. Eastern time. You can go on idobe.com, stream every single episode. We are in the triple digits and actually booked out till November 2019. That is not a joke. You can go on iTunes, the podcast app, subscribe to every episode for free, download everything, and just go apeshit. And Eric, again, thank you for your time. And most importantly, thank you for truly opening up about your mental health issues. That takes a lot of, as I said before, fucking balls. So much respect.
No, thanks, bud.
All right.